She'd been interviewed by several reporters, telling them she'd moved to Philadelphia to start a new life. I'd done some digging, cross-referencing what I could find in photos online with information in her most recent interviews and located her neighborhood. No one seemed to be questioning the fact that she'd chosen to live over 4 hours from Richmond, where Judge and Mrs. Kendall lived, nor that she had yet to go anywhere near Bootleg Springs since her reappearance. I found those facts highly suspicious, and although they didn't prove she was an imposter, they did support my theory. But before I could do anything else, I needed proof. Solid scientific proof that this woman wasn't Callie Kendall.
"Do you feel better now that you had a chance to negotiate with the real estate agent?"
George asked when we got into his car. He reached behind to set a stack of mail on the back seat. "I got you a much better deal," I said. "He was going to overcharge you." He smiled.
"Thanks, Junebug. Where to now?"
I plugged the address in the GPS app on George's phone. "There."
"All right, Scooby June. But please tell me we're not driving over there so you can knock on her door and ask for ID.
"Not at all," I said. "I think at this stage of my investigation, speaking to her directly would be a mistake."
"So what are we going to do?"
"Get a DNA sample." George started coughing.
"Excuse me, what now?"
"As part of the original missing persons and potential homicide investigation, they obtained DNA evidence. If I can get a DNA sample, I'll have a genetics lab run it against the known DNA from Callie Kendall. Then it won't matter what she looks like or what parts of her story are questionable. DNA evidence won't lie."
"Okay, I'm with you in theory, but how are you going to get DNA?"
"According to the laboratory technician I spoke with, the three best sources would be a toothbrush, underwear, or a hair sample."
"June, I am not going to steal this woman's toothbrush or panties. Especially panties."
I glanced at him with a smile. He was so cute when he got worked up. "I wouldn't ask you to touch her panties."
"That's good to hear. The only panties I want to make off with are yours."
His comment sent a little tingle rushing through me. But we were here on a mission, so I just smiled at him again. "Let's see if we can locate her." Following the GPS, we drove across town and pulled into a quiet neighborhood. The sidewalks were clean, and the manicured landscaping was tidy. In my digging, I'd also discovered that the apartment Callie was living in had been rented by Mrs. Kendall. That was a fact I hadn't cataloged yet in terms of what it meant. Did it lend credence that she really was Callie? Were the Kendalls simply as fooled as the rest of the world, or were they cooperating with her for reasons of their own? I wasn't sure, so I kept that information in the neutral column. "That's her building," I said, pointing to the large brick structure on the left. "There's a spot up ahead." George parked and I dug into my handbag, pulling out a pair of oversized sunglasses and a scarf.
"What's that for?"
he asked. "I'm going incognito."
"Are we supposed to just sit here until she comes out? This is pretty stalkery."
According to what little I could glean from the most recent blog posts about her, I calculated the most likely time for her to emerge from her building as 3 in the afternoon.
"Which is right about now. Imagine that."
"I didn't imagine it. I used..."
"Just an expression, Junebug."
"Oh, of course." I slipped the sunglasses on and put the scarf around my neck. I could pull it over my hair if I needed to, or use it to cover the lower part of my face. Then I got a second pair of sunglasses out of my bag and passed them to George. "For you."
"Don't these just make us look suspicious?"
"It's spring. Sunglasses are an appropriate accessory, given the clear sky today." He took the black aviators and slipped them on.
"Indeed."
We waited in comfortable silence for a while. I watched Callie's building. George traced his fingers along the back of my hand, as if he were mapping the shape of my bones. It was very distracting, but I had no intention of asking him to stop. Physical contact with George had become one of my favorite things. Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed a man across the street. The feel of George's fingers along my skin held my attention, but something tickled at the edge of my awareness. "Wait, is that?" I turned to look, but he was gone. Had I imagined him?
Or had he turned down the gap between two buildings?
Is that what?
George asked.
Did you see her?
No. I looked again, but I didn't see anyone. For a second, I thought I saw Gibson Bodine.
Gibson? What would he be doing out here?
I don't know. I must be mistaken. George rubbed his chin.
Did he know Callie?
I'd assume as well as any of us did, although Gibson was 20 to her 16 when she disappeared. I don't recall him hanging around with the teenage crowd then.
Hmm,
George said.
I was just wondering if maybe he was here doing what we're doing, trying to figure out if it's really her.
I suppose it's possible, but more likely that I saw someone similar and my brain filled in the missing pieces, constructing a likeness I recognized. He grinned at me.
Fair enough.
Just then, Callie left her building. Duck! I tried to push his head down as I scrunched low in my seat.
I think ducking is more conspicuous than just sitting here like we belong.
That's a valid point. Now that I was down low, I couldn't see. But it seemed prudent to remain where I was so my movement didn't attract additional attention. Did she look?
Nope.
What's she doing? I need you to be my eyes, George.
She's getting in a car.
Is she leaving?
Not yet, but I think it's safe to assume that's why she got in.
Follow her, but not too close. I paused, hearing Cassidy's chastisement in my mind.
Manners, June.
I mean, please follow her, but not too close.
Will do, Scooby June.
He pulled out onto the street. I stayed low, watching the tops of buildings, trees, and bits of sky. Eventually, I deemed it safe to sit up, which was decidedly more comfortable, and certainly safer in the event of an accident. Callie parked in front of a restaurant and got out. George found a spot a block away, and we got out to follow.
Act natural, I whispered to George as we walked toward the restaurant.
He paused, and his eyes flicked up and down.
Are you going to wear those glasses inside?
I considered that for a second. It seemed as if concealing my identity was the prudent choice, but if this woman wasn't Callie, and I was convinced she wasn't, she wouldn't recognize me, and wearing sunglasses indoors might appear unnecessarily conspicuous. No, I suppose that isn't necessary. I took them off and put them in my bag. You go first, and we'll pretend we're not together.
Why?
Because you're going to talk to her.
Hold on, Scooby June. You mean you want me to distract her, don't you?
Yes, of course. You should flirt with her. I suspect a flirtatious encounter will be particularly distracting.
Flirt with her?
He hadn't phrased it as a question. I answered anyway. Yes.
And you're going to try to get something with her DNA?
Again. Not phrased as a question. Yes. He shook his head.
All right. I guess I signed on for this crazy when I agreed to come out here. At least it's not a biker bar this time.
Agreed. The level of danger we're encountering must be at least 72% less than in Hollis Corner.
Is that so?
He bit his bottom lip.
Careful, Junebug. You keep talking statistics like that, and I'll be dragging you back to my car and making another run at second base.
It took considerable effort to ignore the rush of heat between my legs. This is important. We need to focus. The corner of his mouth hooked in a smile.
Okay, but I make no promises once we're done here.
My heart fluttered, and my cheeks warmed at the thought of all the things George and I could do in his car. I blew out a breath to stay focused and gesture toward the door. You first. I'll wait before entering.
Okay, just be careful.
I'm not a reckless person by nature.
You're a bootlegger, June. Reckless is in your blood.
He walked into the restaurant, letting the door shut behind him. I waited several minutes before following him inside. About half of the tables were full, and the buzz of conversation filled the air. It was small, almost cramped, with two- or four-person tables placed too close together for my taste. A harried-looking waitress dressed all in black navigated the small spaces between the tables.
A seat yourself sign stood just inside the door, which was perfect for our purposes. I picked a table near the entrance and slipped into the chair. George was already sitting at a table next to Callie. He was so tall he dwarfed the small table, his right leg spilling out into the aisle. Yet his demeanor was casual, as if he didn't have a care in the world. It made his size less intimidating than it might have been otherwise. It was fascinating to watch him strike up a conversation with her. He simply leaned slightly in her direction and spoke. He was so natural, so confident in his ability to interact with others, I didn't see even a hint of anxiety in his expression. I couldn't see Callie's face, nor could I hear what they were saying. George's eyes flicked to me for the briefest second, and I remembered I was here on a mission. I'd considered waiting until she left and taking the straw from her drink. But that might not contain enough DNA for the lab to get an accurate result. I was here now. I wanted to ensure I took full advantage of this opportunity. That meant hair. The laboratory technician had said it was important that the root of the hair be intact. The best way to ensure I had a usable sample was to pluck several strands directly from her head. The table behind her was taken, but only by a single occupant. I met George's eyes again and nodded for him to keep talking. He shifted his body weight so he was angled toward her. She did the same. That seemed to indicate she was engrossed in their conversation. Now was my chance. I moved to the table behind Callie and slipped into the empty seat. The other occupant looked up at me, his eyebrows raised. Clearly he didn't understand why I'd just helped myself to a spot at his table. I needed to keep him quiet before he attracted Callie's attention. "Sorry, are you alone?" I asked. His mouth hung open for a second before he replied.
Yeah.
May I join you?
Oh.
He closed the book he'd been reading and adjusted his glasses.
Sure.
Thank you. I glanced over my shoulder. Callie and I were back to back, our chairs almost touching.
I'm Luke, he said. I haven't ordered yet, if you want to, you know.
What? Something Cassidy had once told me suddenly sprang to mind. You need to pay attention so you can see when guys are flirting with you. Had that been an attempt at flirtation? I'm June, but I'm in a committed relationship.
Oh, sure, he said. That's... yeah, I'm not surprised.
However, you're quite attractive, and the fact that you're reading increases your appeal. I suggest frequenting local bookstores if you're interested in finding a date. If you see a girl you're attracted to, offer to buy her a book. Better yet, buy the same book, and ask her to have coffee with you later to discuss what you've read. He looked at me as if I'd just unlocked the secrets of the universe.
That's a brilliant idea. Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, if you'll excuse me. I twisted around and reached. George's voice rose slightly, and I could hear what might have been the punchline of a joke. I only meant to pluck a few hairs, but right as I grabbed, she flipped her hair over her shoulder, and I wound up with a fistful instead. Already mid-tug, there was nothing I could do. I yanked a handful of Callie's hair right out of her head. In a panic, I dove beneath the table. By some miracle, I didn't bump into the table legs, but I wound up practically sitting on Luke's feet.
Ouch!
Callie's voice. I couldn't see her, which was good, because that meant she couldn't see me. But by the view I had of her legs, she'd whipped around.
What was that?
George's voice rose in pitch. Whether in fear of getting caught, or because he couldn't see where I'd gone, I wasn't sure.
I don't know. Are you okay?
Yeah, she said. I think so. I hesitated, but George continued talking to her. A second later, I decided the best course of action would be to leave immediately. As quickly as I could, I stuffed her hair in the plastic bag I'd brought to contain the DNA sample. Glancing up, I caught Luke's gaze. His eyes were wide, his expression full of alarm.
It's better if you don't know, I whispered.
Staying on my hands and knees, I crawled quickly for the door.
Chapter 31. George. The door opened and shut, but I didn't see anyone. Was that June? Jesus, she'd practically ripped a handful of hair out of Callie's head. Thankfully, no one seemed to notice her leave. My name's George, by the way, I said, trying to keep Callie's attention. Callie? She reached up and smoothed the back of her hair down. The waitress came to my table and asked if I was ready to order. I didn't want to stay and have a meal, but it would look odd if I got up and left now. I ordered a coffee and a bagel. That wouldn't take too long. I figured June would want me to see what I could find out about Callie while I was in here, so I kept talking. Are you from Philly?
No, I moved here recently, she said. I grew up in Virginia. What about you?
I'm from Charlotte originally, but I've been in Philly for a while.
It's a beautiful city, she said. I've always loved it here. What do you do for a living?
The way she asked that question set me on edge. Something in her tone. It reminded me of girls trying to pretend they didn't know who I was, so I'd think they weren't typical groupies. I used to play professional football, but I retired last season after an injury.
That's terrible, she said. I'm sorry, I haven't exactly been following, well, anything for a while now.
Was she fishing for me to ask why, or was she trying to avoid the topic of her supposed imprisonment by a cult? I decided to take the bait and see what she said. Pardon me if this is forward, but you look familiar, I said. Do I know you from somewhere? She batted her eyelashes and looked down.
Maybe. I guess I was a little bit newsworthy recently. I'm Callie Kendall.
Right, I said. The girl who reappeared after going missing all those years ago. Wow, it sounds like you had quite an experience. She nodded, tucking her hair behind her ear.
Yeah, I did. I'm just glad to be free.
The waitress brought my coffee and bagel, then set a sandwich down on Callie's table. She glanced at me again, her eyes widening with an expression I knew well. Recognition.
Oh my God, I can't believe I missed it before, the waitress said. You're G.T. Thompson.
Yes, ma'am. She practically giggled.
Oh, it's really you. I'm sorry. I'm just such a big fan. I literally cried when you got hurt last season.
A few other patrons were glancing my direction. Great. I hoped June hadn't expected me to stay incognito. Now the whole place knew G.T. Thompson was here. Thanks for your concern, I said with a smile. But I'm doing just fine. Callie was watching me with what appeared to be mild curiosity. The waitress asked for an autograph, and the next thing I knew, I had a line of half a dozen people asking me to sign something. Callie was still eating when the attention on me faded, and everyone went back to their meals. I decided I needed to get out of there. I didn't think June would come in looking for me, but you never knew with that girl. She was ballsy enough, she just might. I stood and nodded to Callie.
Nice to meet you. You too.
I tossed some money on the table to cover the coffee and bagel I'd barely touched, then walked out the door. Outside, I found June standing next to my car. Jesus, I said under my breath. That had been stressful.
What took you so long? June asked. Did you have lunch?
Sort of. I couldn't walk out right after you, so I had to order something. And then the waitress recognized me. I had to sign a bunch of autographs before I could get out of there. If there was any reason to keep me being here a secret, I blew that one.
You are very tall, and you're well known, especially here. It would have been difficult to remain inconspicuous.
No shit. Did you crawl out of there? She waved a hand like it was of no importance.
Of course, I needed to get away without attracting undue attention.
Since it had apparently worked, no one had remarked on a woman crawling out the door, I decided to let that drop. Please tell me you got what you need. She grinned and held up a small plastic bag.
I believe I did.
Good job, Scooby June. Now, let's go before she comes out. We got in my car and I drove away quickly. That had been nerve-wracking. June was many things, but subtle wasn't one of them. I couldn't believe Callie hadn't caught her grabbing her hair.
What did she talk about? June asked. Did you get anything incriminating?
Not really. She said she was a recent Philly transplant, but she'd grown up in Virginia.
June tapped her finger against her lips. Grew up in Virginia is consistent with Callie Kendall, but she must have researched the case thoroughly to be able to pull this off. She'd know where the real Callie grew up. Anything else?
I got the sense that she was pretending she didn't know who I was. I could be wrong about that, but I've seen it before. Some girls try to get close to players by acting like they don't know who we are. She gave me that vibe.
Interesting.
Tell me something. What are you going to do if you're wrong and she is the real Callie? She shrugged.
Nothing.
Nothing? Just let it go?
I'll still wonder about the inconsistencies in her story. At that point, the most plausible explanation will be that she made errors when she was interviewed by police, but I'm confident that my theory is correct, and soon I'll have proof.
I suppose you will. The next day, I had phone calls to make. Secretly planning a big event was proving to be a lot of work. I'd already gotten Bowie to let me use the high school gym, and Gibson and his band had agreed to provide the entertainment. I still needed to have posters made, and I wanted to get a banner to string up across Lake Drive. I was hoping to keep my involvement on the down low until after the event had been announced, and I could ask June to be my date. I'd let her know I was behind it later. Andrea had sent me the names of some local printers, so I called to get pricing. I also needed to get my tux. I thought about renting one, but I was hard to fit for normal clothes, let alone a tuxedo. I'd either have Andrea bring mine out, or I'd take another trip to Philly before the big night. With my checklist taken care of for the time being, I turned my attention to the stack of mail I'd picked up at my house. Usually Andrea sorted it out for me first, then sent me anything I needed. Since I was there, I'd just grabbed the stack. I thumbed through the envelopes, tossing the junk mail in the recycling. There was a card from my mom with a little white bunny on the front. She had an honest-to-goodness greeting card addiction. She sent about one a month, whether there was a holiday or not, and she had shoeboxes full of them at home. At the bottom of the pile was a nondescript white envelope, but the return address caught my eye. It was from the IRS. Normally, I would have sent anything tax-related to Andrea, but something about this made me wonder. If it was time-sensitive, it might be better if I opened it. I slipped my finger beneath the flap and tore it open. The crisp paper crinkled as I unfolded it. Scanning the letter, I stopped short. Non-payment. Back taxes owed. Applicable fines. Investigation for tax evasion. Will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. What the fuck was this? I read through it again, letting the details sink in. It had to be a mistake. According to this letter, I not only owed back taxes for the last 5 years, they were threatening to investigate for tax evasion. Tax evasion meant prison. I grabbed my phone and tried to call Andrea, but she didn't answer. I paced around the room reading the letter again. This was bad, really bad. A guy I'd played with in San Francisco had been caught cheating on his taxes. He'd lied about the income from his endorsement deals and tried to hide the money. They'd come after him hardcore. He'd only avoided prison by paying an enormous amount in interest and penalties. It had nearly ruined him. The urgency had me dialing my lawyer, Mark White. After waiting on hold for several minutes, his assistant put me through.
Hi, GT. What can I do for you?
Mark, I have a problem. I got a notice from the IRS, and I'm not gonna lie, it's kinda scary.
They always sound scary, he said, his voice even. Tell me what it says.
I read it to him, then waited, hoping he was about to tell me I was overreacting.
You're right. That's not good. I'm going to need you to level with me here, GT. We have attorney-client privilege, so be honest. Have you been lying on your taxes? No, I said, vehement. No, Mark, I swear, this has to be a mistake. All right. The first thing they're going to do is an audit. We'll need to pull together all your records, tax returns, and every scrap of supporting documentation. Who's your accountant? My assistant Andrea does my accounting. She does your taxes? Yeah. Mark paused. You don't have a third-party accountant handle your taxes? No, Andrea has an accounting degree. She's always handled it for me. That's raising a red flag for me, GT. You think Andrea made a mistake on my taxes? If this is all due to an honest mistake, it's more than one. An audit is one thing, tax evasion is another. That means they have reason to believe you falsified information to get out of paying what you owe. That's not a mistake, GT. That's either multiple mistakes over several years, or it's something worse. June's warning ran through my mind. She thought I trusted Andrea with too much. I'd figured she was overreacting, letting unnecessary jealousy cloud her judgment. Now, I wasn't so sure. What do we need to do to find out? I asked. Does Andrea keep your files and records somewhere I can access without her knowing? Yeah, I can give you my password. Send it. I'll do some digging and see what I can find. Thanks, Mark. Sure. Don't panic yet. I'll get back to you. While I waited to hear back from Mark, I decided to do my own digging. I almost never looked at my financial records. That was a lot of what I had Andrea do. She was more than an average assistant, and I paid her accordingly. It had always seemed so much easier to have one person who could do everything from make dinner reservations to oversee my investments. Andrea was good. She was on my team. Wasn't she? I spent 2 days poring over tax returns and bank statements. I didn't know what I was looking for. At first, it all seemed like Greek to me. I couldn't make heads or tails of anything. How would I know if the numbers were wrong? And more importantly, would I be able to find the cause of any discrepancies? After a while, things started to make sense. I could see where some of the numbers were coming from, matched them to my sources of income. My football salary was straightforward. I knew what that had been, and the numbers all added up. But when I got to the ancillary income sources, especially a few of the smaller endorsement deals, something seemed off. I had to look up the contracts to be sure, and then I had a hard time finding them. My files looked to be meticulously organized, but there were key things missing. I'd done a commercial for a car dealership a couple of years back, and I couldn't find a record of it anywhere, and it didn't look like it had been reported on my taxes. That wasn't good. My tax payments didn't make sense either. What Andrea was reporting on my tax returns as having been paid didn't match what had come out of my bank account each quarter. It looked like I'd been overpaying, not underpaying, at least compared to the amounts Andrea had calculated. So if that money hadn't been going to pay my taxes, where had it gone? I called the bank, and my sense of dread grew. My tax payments were all routed through a second account, an account that didn't have my name on it. There was no reason for Andrea to filter my money through another account, no good reason at least. When Mark called the next day, we compared notes. We'd both come to the same conclusion. Andrea hadn't made a mistake on my taxes. She'd been stealing from me. She'd underreported my income to the IRS, but still pulled the full amount of my tax payments from my bank account. We hadn't been able to trace exactly where that money had gone, but it seemed clear that Andrea was pocketing the extra. Mark advised me not to tell Andrea I knew the truth. He needed more time to prepare before we moved on this. He gave me a list of records and documentation to find, and we set up a meeting for the following week. He also advised I keep the details of my predicament to myself for the time being. He didn't want word getting back to Andrea that we were onto her, giving her time to cover her tracks or get rid of evidence. And I didn't want June to know.
I felt like the world's biggest idiot for letting this happen. Just when I was getting settled, finding a new direction, a new place in the world, this had to knock me on my ass. And it was my own damn fault. I'd been acting like a spoiled athlete, letting someone else handle my shit, assuming it was fine, assuming I could trust her. I didn't understand why Andrea had done this. I thought I'd been a good boss. I paid her well, didn't make ridiculous demands or act inappropriately with her. Was this retaliation for something, or was she just an opportunist with a low moral code? From what Mark and I had found so far, it didn't look like she'd been stealing for the first year she'd worked for me. The second year, there were a few numbers that looked wrong, but nothing on a large scale. Maybe she'd been testing me, seeing if I'd notice. When I hadn't, because I just let her do her thing without checking on any of it, she'd gone further, taken more. I texted her to say I was going dark for a little while. I needed time to get my head together so I wouldn't be reachable. In reality, I didn't trust myself to speak to her. If this all turned out to be true, she'd betrayed me, and I didn't think I'd ever be able to forgive her. I didn't know if I'd be able to forgive myself either.
Chapter 32, June. I stood on the sidewalk with Cassidy, Scarlett, and Leah May after meeting them for Saturday brunch. All three of us stared up at the banner strung across Lake Drive. It was white with black lettering and silver and gold starbursts that were reminiscent of fireworks. Bootleg Springs Do-Over Prom, Saturday, May 7th. "All I know is Devlin better ask me," Scarlett said. "To the prom?" Cassidy asked. "Yep," Scarlett said. "A do-over prom for grown-ups? I'm going, and he's bringing me." Leah May looked up, shielding her eyes from the sun. "I'm so excited." "Why are you even worried about it, Scar?" Cassidy asked. "It's not like he'll ask someone else." Scarlett put her hands on her hips, her head tilting up toward the sign. "He better not, if he knows what's good for him." Cassidy laughed. "Bowie already asked me." "He did?" Scarlett asked. "I mean, that's good. He better. Did Jameson ask you, Leah May?" Leah May nodded, then clutched her hands to her chest. "We should all go shopping for dresses, and I'll do our accessories."
"Sounds fun," Cassidy said. "What about you, Junie? Did George ask you to the dance?"
"This entire conversation is oddly juvenile," I said. "You sound like you're in high school."
"Aw, don't be grumpy because you don't have a date yet," Cassidy said, nudging me with her arm.
"I bet he's planning on asking you."
"He's my boyfriend."
"That's my point," Cassidy said. By the looks the girls were sharing, I got the impression they knew something, or understood something, that I didn't. The truth was, I was experiencing a strange surge of jealousy toward Cassidy and Leah May. They had prom dates. I did not. It stood to reason that if George wished to attend the do-over prom, he'd ask me to accompany him. But he hadn't. What did that mean? I hadn't seen much of George in the last week. Since we'd returned from Philadelphia, he'd been busier than normal. I'd been busy with work as well as continuing my quest to uncover more information about the supposed Callie Kendall. I'd spent my evenings reading more of the books Piper had recommended, but I was beginning to wonder if exploring my emotions through reading romantic fiction was as good an idea as I'd originally thought. I'd found myself alternatively laughing, crying, and feeling inexplicably aroused, depending on the content of the stories. Each book was like an emotional roller coaster. I couldn't decide if I liked the ride or if it had been better when I'd pushed my feelings aside, only observing them occasionally.
"Don't worry, Junie. I'm sure he's going to ask you," Leah May said.
As if on cue, George turned the corner, appearing in front of us. He was dressed in a gray waffle-knit shirt and jeans. His dark hair was delightfully combed back, and in his hands, those hands that I still found inexplicably fascinating, was a large something wrapped in crisp brown paper.
"Ladies," he said, then met my eyes. "Junebug."
He handed the something to me. At first glance, it looked as if it was going to be a bouquet of flowers, but it wasn't flowers. It was a Romanesco broccoli. I stared at the beautiful chartreuse flower bud. It resembled a cross between cauliflower and broccoli, but what made it amazing was its natural approximation of a fractal. This is so beautiful. I'm sorry if this is a silly question, but what is that? Scarlet asked.
Romanesco broccoli, George said. Its buds form a natural fractal, the branches making a logarithmic spiral.
It's math in flower form, I said, my voice awed.
Wow, Scarlet said. He's good.
Cassidy, Scarlet, and Leah May started backing up slowly, leaving me and George somewhat alone on the sidewalk. Thank you, I said. This is one of the nicest things anyone has ever given me. It's very visually pleasing.
So are you, he said, and I heard a muffled aw from behind me.
Apparently the girls hadn't gone far.
I have something to ask you.
My eyes flicked up to the banner, then back to him. There was no reason my heart should have been racing the way it was, nor that I should have been experiencing such a rush of excitement. It made no sense for my bloodstream to suddenly fill with adrenaline, as if this was a crucial life moment. If he was about to ask what I thought he was about to ask, it was just a dance, and an odd dance at that. But in that moment, I really wanted him to ask.
I was wondering if you'd be my date for the do-over prom.
My brain flooded with endorphins, and I couldn't keep the smile off my face. Yes, I would love to be your date. He stepped in, slipping a hand around my waist, and leaned down to kiss me.
They're so cute, I can't stand it.
I know, they really are. That's it. I'm going to find Devlin, and he better be ready to ask me to this dance.
Do you have plans tonight? George asked. I thought we might have a stay-in date tonight if you're not busy. I've missed you this week.
I've missed you, too. I'd love a stay-in date night.
My place or yours?
I think yours is the better choice. Mine has Jonah, who is a perfectly decent roommate, but is also home tonight as far as I'm aware.
He said. A night alone with my June bug. Whatever will I do with you?
A tingle rushed down my spine. That was a rhetorical question meant to be suggestive, wasn't it?
Indeed it was.
Then given that the definition of a rhetorical question is one for which the asker doesn't expect an answer, I'll just say, I can think of several things. He kissed the tip of my nose.
Me too.
Mello hopped over to George as soon as we arrived. I had to admit she was extremely cute. Her diminutive size, soft white fur, and light blue eyes were quite appealing. She ran around us in a circle, her little nose twitching. George picked her up and brought her close to his face, touching their noses together. Every time I saw him do that, it made me think of babies. We'd brought dinner with us, so we dished up onto plates. We sat together and ate, chatting about how our weeks had gone. Mello was content, nibbling a treat of fresh greens. After dinner, we decided on a movie. George turned it on, then sprawled out on the couch. He was so tall, he took up every inch. "Where am I supposed to sit?" I asked. He reached for me.
"Come here."
I settled down between his legs with my back against his front, my head resting against his chest. He leaned his cheek against my head, slid an arm around my waist, and pressed play. Lying with him like this felt good. His body was warm, the firmness of his athletic frame both comforting and arousing. He traced little circles across my belly with his fingers and nuzzled his face against my hair. His masculine scent deepened my relaxation, as did the feel of his chest as he breathed. His other hand slipped up my ribcage to cup my breast over my shirt. He massaged it gently and a low groan emanated from his throat. I shifted slightly, the hardness of his erection pressing into my back. I loved the way that felt. Up until now, the male anatomy had been somewhat alarming to me. My experiences with it hadn't been entirely positive. But I felt safe with George.
The framework he'd created to gradually increase the intimacy of our interactions was working. I could feel the change happening inside me. My affection for him was growing, my desire to be close to him increasing. I was not only comfortable with his touch, I craved it, found myself wanting more. He groaned into my ear as I moved again, pressing against his hard length.
Junebug, you feel so good.
His hand slipped beneath my shirt. He teased my nipple while he kissed my ear. Waves of sensation shot through my body, traveling across my skin, in my veins, through my bones. His breath on my neck was warm, and he kept murmuring softly in my ear. That exquisite pressure built between my legs. I rolled my hips, instinct taking over. I needed friction, contact, movement. George slid his other hand down my belly to the waistband of my pants.
I want to touch you, baby.
Yes, please. He groaned, pushing his hips up so his erection dug into my backside. He wasted no time unfastening my pants and slid his hand into my panties.
You want me to touch your pussy?
He asked softly in my ear. His fingers brushed lower, closer to where I needed him. Yes.
That's my girl.
A delicious wave of pleasure stole through me as his fingers delved lower. His hands, his large, glorious hands. One slipped beneath my bra to cut my breast. I glanced down to see the other disappearing between my legs. I was still mostly clothed, and yet the image of his hands on me this way was intensely erotic. I loved those hands, and I loved what he was doing with them. His finger traced the seam at my center, his touch still soft and gentle.
Is your pussy wet, baby? Do you want my fingers inside you?
Oh my God, yes.
That's my beautiful girl,
he murmured.
I want to touch that perfect pussy.
I closed my eyes, surrendering to the sound of his voice in my ear, the feel of his fingers teasing me. My nipples were so sensitive, every brush of his hand and the feel of fabric against them made me tingle. He dipped a fingertip inside, and I gasped at the intense rush of feeling.
Is that what you need, baby?
I nodded. His finger slid in further, moving easily through my wetness, in and out, his palm pressing against my clit, his finger giving me the friction I needed so badly. I bucked my hips against his hand, seeking more.
Fuck, June. I love making you feel good. Your pussy is so hot, so wet. Do you want more?
Yes. He growled low in his throat and slid two fingers inside me. My legs opened wider, my head falling back against his shoulder. He thrust his fingers in, moving faster now, and ground his cock against me in a matching rhythm.
That's it, my beautiful girl, he said. You like that? You like my fingers inside you?
He was stirring me into a frenzy. My cheeks flushed, and tension built in my core. I kept my eyes closed, focusing on nothing but the way this felt. His palm rubbing my clit, his fingers moving in and out of me, the wetness, the heat, the delicious pressure. George, I whispered.
Yes, my sweet Junebug,
he said.
Yes, fuck, your pussy feels so good.
The pressure in my core rose to a peak, a tight, hot bundle of tension that had me whimpering, begging for more, begging him to keep going. Don't stop, don't stop. And then I came apart. The orgasm rolled through me as dozens of tiny explosions fired off. I clenched around his fingers, once, twice, again, shuddering and pulsing as I rode his hand through my climax. When it subsided, he slid his hand out of my panties and threaded his arms around my waist, holding me tight. I needed more than that. I needed to hold him, too. He loosened his grip on me as I spun around so I was facing him. I straddled him, letting my legs slide down either side of his waist, and wrapped my arms around his shoulders. his erection pressed between my legs as we embraced. I moved against him, rubbing up and down a few times. He groaned. That low growl emanating from his throat was so masculine, so erotic. I sat up and met his eyes, licking my lips as I unfastened his pants.
Junebug, you don't have to.
I know. I want to. Like the rest of George Thompson, his cock was impressively large. It strained against his pants, springing free when I lowered his underwear. I took a moment to admire it. The smooth head, the thick shaft. It was a thing of beauty. As I wrapped my hand around the base, a bead of moisture glistened on the tip. I applied pressure, testing his reaction. He sucked in a breath. I took that as a sign to continue.
I'm so amped up right now. I'm ready to shoot off like a rocket, he said.
The strain in his voice was sensual. I liked being able to do this to him. I stroked up and down, swiping the moisture with my thumb. We both watched, our eyes locked on his manhood.
Holy shit,
he breathed. He thickened even more, his cock harder than ever. He growled again, his brow furrowing, and his muscles flexed.
June, I'm gonna come.
It was like he could barely get the words out. I didn't stop. I stroked him faster, reveling at the feel of his cock pulsing in my hand. He grunted as a thick rope of cum spurted out the tip. I kept going, nearly frantic at the heady rush of watching him come. Another pulse, and more cum, yet another. He grunted and groaned, his abs flexing, his body going rigid as he thrust against me. I could feel when it was over, his cock softening slightly. I let go, realizing I was breathing as hard as he was.
Fuck.
He leaned his head back against the couch.
I didn't expect that.
Did that feel good? He grabbed me, pulling me close, and captured my mouth with his.
That felt so good,
he said.
You?
So good. We glanced down between our still-clothed bodies.
Sorry about the mess,
he said. I don't mind if you don't mind. A wide grin stole across his features.
I don't mind a bit. How'd you like third base?
Third base is good. Chapter 33, June. I expected to hear from the genetics lab about the DNA sample any day, but so far no news. Not that I had any doubt what the results would show. Seeing the so-called Callie Kendall in person had only increased my confidence in my theory. She did look remarkably like the Callie I remembered. Even I had to admit the resemblance was striking. But the doppelganger phenomenon was very real. Statistically speaking, most people on Earth had at least one person who looked remarkably like them without sharing a close genetic relationship. I found it fascinating, and had even posted my picture on the Find My Twin website to see if my doppelganger could be found. Despite the resemblance, I was certain I was right, and when I had proof, I'd be able to expose her. Wednesday afternoon, I finished with work early. I decided to surprise George with his favorite meal, meatloaf and mashed potatoes with gravy. I got to work in the kitchen, preparing the meatloaf mixture and putting it in the oven to bake. Then I got started on the potatoes and gravy. Jonah came into the kitchen while I was cooking.
Hey, June, that smells good.
Thank you. I'm sorry to say I won't be able to share. I'm bringing the meal to George.
No big deal.
He opened the fridge and pulled out a container.
A meal prepped, so I'm good.
Your organizational skills are admirable, especially when it comes to your nutrition habits.
Thanks.
He plated his dinner and put it in the microwave.
So, the do-over prom. That's something else, huh? Is George taking you?
I smiled as I stirred the gravy. Yes, he asked me to accompany him. Do you plan to attend? He leaned against the kitchen counter and shrugged.
Maybe. I was thinking about asking Lacey Dickerson.
You don't sound terribly enthusiastic.
Well, I'm not sure about dating right now,
but it seems like everyone else is, so maybe I should give it a shot.
If you're feeling left out, I can identify with that, I said. I suppose you've noticed I'm a little different from most people in Bootleg Springs. I know what it's like to be a bit on the outside.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, my siblings are great. I expected a lot more resistance when I first came here, but I don't know if this is where I'm meant to be.
And dating would complicate matters, especially if you found yourself in what you'd like to be a long-term relationship.
Yep, exactly.
He rubbed the back of his neck. Jonah and Lacey Dickerson. It was hard to picture. She was the right age, certainly, just a year younger than me. Pretty, with blonde hair and blue eyes, and single, which was an obvious prerequisite. But something about the notion of Jonah dating her sat wrong with me. I couldn't pinpoint why. I didn't typically have strong instincts when it came to human relationships. Perhaps I was learning. I was also learning that it wasn't always best to say everything that came into my mind. This seemed like an instance when keeping my thoughts to myself would be prudent. I didn't think Jonah should date Lacey, but it was likely that he needed to figure that out for himself. If you decide to move forward with your request, I hope she answers in the affirmative.
Thanks, Junie.
He took a deep breath through his nose.
That really does smell good. George is going to love it.
Thank you. I turned off the heat and whisked the gravy a few more times. I think so, too. When dinner was finished and packed in containers for transport, I went to George's rental. I paused outside, looking at the small cabin. The location was excellent for a rental. Close to town, partial view of the lake. But it was more vacation rental than permanent home. He was making preparations to move to Bootleg, and when he did, I doubted he'd live here. I'd kept my eyes open for a suitable piece of real estate. A house, perhaps. Or maybe he'd want to do what Scarlett and Devlin were doing, buy land and build something to his particular taste. I also wondered something else. What if he lived with me? There was no doubt in my mind his decision to relocate to Bootleg Springs was at least 87% due to my presence here. The other 13 was a mix of the food at Moonshine Diner and the hot springs. But in large part, George was moving here for me. It was a heady thought that this man I admired and was falling deeply in love with wished to relocate to continue our relationship without the strain of distance. His financial security seemed well assured, so even in post-football retirement, I assumed he would live comfortably, whether or not he pursued another full-time career. And if he asked, I could help with his finances and investments. I was highly adept at it, having secured myself a number of lucrative assets and endeavors. His move here made sense. Perhaps moving in with me made sense as well. Was our relationship ready for that level of commitment? It wasn't something I'd ever considered before. Generally, I preferred living alone. Jonah had proved to be a good roommate. He was quiet and kept to himself. But living with George would not be the same as living with a roommate. It would be truly sharing my space with another person, opening up my life in a way I'd never done before. I found I very much liked the idea. Feeling a hint of euphoria at my daydreams of cohabitation, I gathered up the dinner I'd cooked and went to George's door. Perhaps tonight I'd broach the subject. George answered, dressed in a white T-shirt and gray sweatpants. Scarlett had once told me that you could discover everything you needed to know about a man by looking at him in a pair of gray sweats. I hadn't understood what she meant until this moment. He looked spectacular. The crisp T-shirt molded to his athletic frame, hinting at the lean, muscular body underneath. And those sweats. They sat low on his hips and showed the bulge of his manhood in a most enticing fashion.
Oh, hey, June.
I gasped and snapped my gaze back to his face. Hello. His expression was tense, his brow furrowed. But his eyes lit up as his nostrils flared.
Do I smell gravy?
I held up the containers. I brought dinner.
Wow. Thanks, Junebug.
He stepped aside so I could enter and shut the door behind me.
That's very sweet of you.
Mellow hopped over, bouncing across the wood floor. Hi, Marshmallow. Are you taking good care of George? She sniffed my foot.
Here, let me take all that.
He grabbed our dinner and brought it into the kitchen. I took off my cardigan and draped it over a chair. From where I was standing, I had a clear view into the single bedroom. George's suitcase was on the bed. Are you going somewhere?
Yeah, I am. I was going to call you tonight and talk to you about it. I have to go back to Philly for a while.
You're already packing. I gestured toward the bedroom. Is this trip imminent?
I leave in the morning.
Oh? How long do you think you'll be gone? He rubbed the back of his neck.
I'm not sure. A couple of weeks. Maybe longer. It depends.
I felt a dip, as if my stomach had suddenly dropped. That's a significant amount of time. Where will you stay?
At my house. I pulled it off the market for the time being.
You're not selling? He took a deep breath.
I will, eventually. I just can't right now. I have to take care of some things first.
What things?
Just some things. Financial stuff.
I didn't like the turn this conversation had taken. George seemed hesitant, like he didn't want to talk to me about this. But finances were one of my areas of expertise. George, if you're having financial trouble, I could help.
Yeah, I know. There are just some things I need to handle.
His tone of voice didn't match his words. He was brushing the subject aside, but I could sense that there was more. It was as if something lurked beneath the surface, causing that shadow behind his eyes. Are you keeping your rental here? I asked.
No.
So you're moving? It wasn't a question. You're moving back to Philadelphia?
No, that's not what I said.
You're giving up the rental, not selling your house, and going to live there for an indeterminate amount of time. That sounds like moving.
It's not permanent, he said. Once I get things squared away, I'll be in a position to come back to Bootleg. And I can come visit on the weekends. I'll be here for the dance and everything.
The dance isn't my biggest concern. I trailed off, unsure of what to say. I didn't know how this was supposed to work. What things do you need to handle? Why won't you elaborate? He put his hands on his hips, still facing the window.
I'm fucked, June. That's the problem. I'm good and fucked.
What are you talking about?
I'm in trouble with the IRS.
What kind of trouble?
The tax evasion kind.
Tax evasion, I said, more to myself than to him.
I don't want you getting wrapped up in this, he said. Turns out Andrea was fudging the numbers. She was underreporting my income, so it looked like I owed less. But she was taking the full amounts out of my bank account and pocketing the difference. To the IRS, it looks like I was lying on my taxes to get out of paying. In reality, I think Andrea's been stealing.
White, hot anger snaked out from my chest, filling my veins with fire. I clenched my hands into fists, digging my fingernails into my palms. She what?
Yeah, and my dumbass had no clue. I have to meet with my lawyer, and there's going to be an audit. We're trying to keep this out of the press, but a reporter called me this morning. My lawyer thinks someone at the IRS leaked the story. This is turning into a shitstorm. That's why I have to go.
Indictment for tax evasion requires that the taxpayer knowingly and willfully committed errors over a period of time.
I'm well aware of the definition at this point.
And the error amounts would need to be significant, I said. There has to be a way to track where Andrea was putting the money.
Yes, June, I know that, and we're working on it.
How long have you known about this?
Does it matter? A while. Look, I'll handle it. My life is in chaos right now, and I need to get my shit together.
But why didn't you tell me? That was what really bothered me. This was the problem I could have helped him through. I wasn't a tax accountant, but I understood more than the average person.
I didn't want you to be involved, he said. This is serious shit, June.
I thought we were serious. We are. He turned to me, and there was no mistaking the frustration in his voice.
I can't fix this overnight. I have to get this squared away before I can move forward with you.
I could feel the wall he'd erected between us, as sure as if I was standing in front of actual brick. He'd kept this from me, didn't want my help, and now he was leaving. I could have helped, I said, although true as it was, the sentiment seemed useless now. I have a better than average understanding of...
Damn it, June, I don't need another accountant.
I pinched my lips closed and stepped backward. All right, I'll let you handle it.
Good.
I no longer wanted to sit and have dinner with him. I was confused, but more than that, I was angry. He didn't need another accountant. Was that all I was good for? I'm sure you're very busy packing. I'll just leave the meal and let you get back to what you were doing. He didn't argue or try to get me to stay. So I left.
Chapter 34. George. I wasn't used to being lonely and bored, but sitting in my house in Philly, I was both. For a decade, I'd had practices and workouts, training sessions and PT appointments, team meetings, game film, training camp. I'd had media appearances and charity events, photo or commercial shoots for endorsements. I'd had plenty to keep me busy, even in the off-season. Now, I had too much time, too much quiet. One day back in Philly, and I was pacing the floors, wishing my meeting with Mark was earlier. My house felt so impersonal. It was nice, I supposed, stylish, but I hadn't chosen much of the furniture. It looked like some designer's take on what a man's house should be. Lots of gray and blue, pieces of my career, jerseys, awards, photos hung on the walls. But even those things didn't feel like me. Not anymore. Maybe I should have stayed in bootleg. I brushed that thought aside. Staying wasn't an option, not when my life was in shambles, but I couldn't get the memory of June's face out of my head. When I told her what was happening and that I had to leave, she'd looked devastated, and coming from a woman who didn't wear her heart on her sleeve, that look of raw hurt on her face had been like a punch to the gut. It wasn't that I wanted to leave her, not even temporarily, but what I wanted and the reality of my messed up life were two different things. Shelby texted around noon, demanding to know what was going on. Turned out she was in Philly for the week. When I told her where I was, she answered with, "I'm coming over." Although I had a feeling my sister was going to lay into me for being such an idiot, I didn't tell her no. Even a lecture about Andrea was better than being lost in my own head, driving myself crazy. She arrived about a half an hour later with cookies. I really did love my sister. "Here," she said, shoving the box of snickerdoodles at me. "They're from the store, so not as good as Mom's, but I figured you could use some cookie love right about now." "Thanks." She took off her jacket and hung it up by the door. "You really need to tell me what's going on, though. You're in the news, Mom's in a panic, and Dad decided to remodel the guest bath again." "That's not good." Our father was many things, but handy was not one of them. Unfortunately for our mom, when he was stressed, he tended to try to remodel their house. "No, it's not. I think I talked him out of trying to take out a wall, though." "I'll call him," I said. When I'd spoken to my parents a few days ago, I'd tried to minimize the situation so they wouldn't worry, but the story had hit the press. I couldn't keep this quiet now, even if I tried. I walked into the kitchen and set down the cookies. Shelby followed. Grateful as I was for her to bring something to cheer me up, I wasn't in the mood. "Can I get you anything?" I asked. She pulled out a chair at the dining room table I'd hardly used.
"Nope, just tell me what's going on."
"All right." I took a seat across from her. "So, I guess you know I'm in trouble with the IRS.
"That's true?"
she asked, her voice tinged with shock.
"I thought it had to be a rumor."
Nope, not a rumor. I'm being investigated for tax evasion.
This has to be a mistake.
Thank you for not assuming I actually did lie on my taxes, I said. Because I didn't, not on purpose at least. Andrea did, though.
Wait, Andrea lied on your taxes? The press is saying your assistant might be involved, but I thought it had to be someone else.
It was Andrea. She underreported my income so it looked like I owed less, then she pocketed the difference from the tax payments.
Holy shit, GT.
I know, and I don't need to hear that I'm a dumbass for letting it happen. I realize that.
I wasn't going to say you're a dumbass, she said. Andrea worked for you for years. You obviously thought you could trust her.
And I was dead wrong. I'm fucked, Shelby.
Okay, what's the plan?
She sat up straighter.
What's your first step?
I'm meeting with my lawyer today.
You fired Andrea already, I assume.
Yeah, but it gets worse. I don't have proof she did it yet. It looks like she did from everything my attorney and I have found so far, but we don't have enough to nail her. And since the story leaked to the press the other day, and they're mentioning her, she's